It is so good to be here, and I wish that the group that we had planned to come up here would be able to make the trip with us, but we are passing a sickness around at Town Acres, and we believe in sharing so much that we even share this, unfortunately. As a matter of fact, Gary Moses, who I know you all know, he is one who has it right now, so that's why he's not here, and another part of the group that was supposed to come with it, they've got it, and so that's why it's just my family, the five of us that made the trip today. I don't know if Charles is here yet. I don't see him. It's good because I'm going to talk about him. And my dad, he's here, so I'm going to talk about him as well. I've got the hardest subject today. Don't let my dad or Charles tell you any differently. Raising young children. And this is why I think it's a little bit more challenging. When it came to Charles's topic, how to make your home great, well, you can go to Bible stories, Bible character, Bible homes, and there's just lesson after lesson on that. Then you go to my dad's, raising faithful children, and there's the same. You go to Noah and his wife, and you go person after person after person and see biblical illustrations in there. But when it comes to raising young children, the Bible talks a lot about it, and I think the challenge in this is, what is more special that differentiates raising young children from raising faithful children and making your home great? So what's the difference? What is it about young children? And so I really tried to come up with something that would be helpful to all of us. And I'm going to, and I'm glad that you made the comment about raising elders. Your husband, you're raising them for the second time in the second childhood. I think the things that we're going to share today are going to help not only in raising young children, but raising teenage children, and even in your marriage. These things that we're going to discuss today will help, because what I'm going to try to share, every single person needs, but especially when it comes to young children. So let's get right into it, and I got to watch the clock so I don't go through the trap door. I've titled this lesson, The Love Connection. The Love Connection. And I've done this for a specific reason, and that is this. In raising young children, listen to the statement. In raising young children, everything you do with them, as you continue to raise them, everything you do depends upon, revolves around love. Every single aspect in raising young children revolves around love. Nothing will work well in a home if there is not that feeling of love, unless your child's love needs are met. And only a child who genuinely feels cared for and genuinely feels love will do his or her best in anything, whether it's school, whether it is athletics, whether it is their spiritual journey. Only a child who genuinely feels that love from his mother and father will give his best in the home. When they feel loved, genuinely feel loved, they'll be easier to train. When they genuinely feel that love, it'll be easier to discipline them if they know that that genuinely comes from love. Why do you think I want you to do this? Because, Daddy, you love me. Why do you want me to do my best in school? Because you must love me and you want what's best for me. And so love is everything in the home. And so we want to talk about the love connection today. And I know there's a game show that used to be called that. That's where I got the title, The Love Connection. I want you to think about this in this way. And I'm going to introduce where I got a lot of this material here in just a moment. But I want you to think about it in this way. Every single child has an emotional tank. That is the place of emotion where they draw their emotional strength that fuels them during the difficult parts of childhood and adolescence and as they continue to grow. But every child is born with an emotional tank. And that emotional tank runs on love, hence the love connection. That is what makes them flourish as children. Well, what kind of love? There's different kinds of love, and we all know this. But the type of love that will fill a child's love tank or emotional tank is the no matter what kind of love, or we probably heard it put better, unconditional love. In other words, I'm going to love you no matter what. And that is the type of love that we have to convey to our children. If I love and I show love only when they please me, That's not going to be and completely top off their emotional fuel tank. They have to know that I love them at all times. In other words, have you ever said this to your children? I've said this in sermons, and I've said it to them, I think, face to face. But I want my children to know this. That children, there is nothing in the world that you could ever do to make me stop loving you. Nothing. You could think of the worst thing that could ever possibly be done. But my children, I want them to know, I'll still love you no matter what. Does that mean I can't be disappointed? Absolutely not. Does that mean I can't be hurt? Absolutely not. But I'm going to love them no matter what. And that's the type of love they have to feel from their mother and father. And so after I make up my mind to do this, well, the next question comes then, how do I communicate that love to their children? I can say that till I'm blue in the face. I can say, I'm going to love you unconditionally. But if they don't feel that, if I've not made that connection with their hearts from my heart to theirs, then saying it 1,000 times is not going to make the difference in their lives. It is sad but true that very few children feel unconditionally loved. There have been studies where children have been asked that question, do you feel loved unconditionally? And it's sad that very few children answered, yes, it is true that they feel unconditionally loved. But you know what? I believe that it's true that most parents do love their children unconditionally. So then how do we make up for that difference in them not feeling unconditionally loved and parents loving their children unconditionally? Well, they're not making that connection. Have you ever heard the phrase, I think sometimes parents just assume that their children know that they love them. Just like, have you ever heard about the man who, and you may have met people like this, may even be one yourself, I don't know. But a man who said, well, I told my wife that I loved her on the day that we got married, and if I ever change my mind, I'll let her know. In other words, she's just supposed to assume every single day of their married life that he still loves her. Because the day comes when he doesn't, why, he'll let her know. That's no way to be, is it? But you know, I think a lot of parents treat their children like that. Well, my children, they just assume. They just know that I love them because of all the things I do for them, put a roof over their head and things like that. So they just must know that I love them. Others think that just saying I love you over and over again will make their children know that they love them unconditionally. But we know that's not true. I want to start off by looking at 1 John chapter 3. 1 John chapter 3. Get your Bibles and turn there with me. And here is where we're going to begin the main part of this lesson. 1 John 3. And let's start this lesson today. When we're thinking about the love connection, how is it that my children can feel that I love them unconditionally and I can keep their emotional tanks filled? Now, I understand and I truly believe that probably every parent here, whether young or old, every parent here loves their child and their children unconditionally. We can take this even further because I think it applies. It's probably true that every husband here loves their wife unconditionally. Hopefully it's true that every wife here today loves her husband unconditionally. But since we're talking about specifically young children, we're going to stick to that. But we're going to see that applies to marriage, it applies to raising children no matter what age, it applies to the whole family life. But I want us to see today how we are going to transfer that unconditional love from our hearts to our children. When we raise young children, how can my children feel that love so that they can do their best at home, at school, in the church, wherever it is? How can I transfer that love from my heart to mine? How can I connect that love? Well, let's ask this question, and it's an obvious question. How did God convey from his heart to mine that he loves me unconditionally? Let's start with 1 John 3, and let's start with verse 16. By this we know love. There's the love connection. By this we know love. How do we know love? Because he laid down his life for us, and we also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? My little children, Here it is. Let us love not in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth. There it is. If we want to make that love connection from our hearts to our children's hearts, it has to be more than words. How did God do it? He gave His only begotten Son. And then He compels us. He begs us there. If we're going to have the love of God, we've got to love not just in word or tongue, but in truth and in deed. That's how we make the love connection. He showed us love by the actions that He did for us. And this is at this point where I want to introduce the book that helped me so much in preparing for this lesson. And I didn't know he had a book on this very topic, but it's The Five Love Languages of Children. You'll probably recognize, perhaps some of us will, the author when I tell you that it is Gary Chapman and Ross Campbell. Forrest Chapman, who's just Gary's father, he's the one that wrote The Love Busters. It's counseling books for husband and wives. Very, very good books, every one of them. His Needs, Her Needs, maybe you've heard of that book. But this book, The Five Love Languages of Children, I like it for several reasons. First of all, because it's true. And second of all, because it helps me. It helped me in preparing this lesson to see where I need to improve as a father, to see how I can better connect with my children, the idea that I love them unconditionally. And in this book, he talks about five love languages that connect your heart with your child's heart. And this is what I want us to do. We're going to go through these five love languages of children. I suggest to you that all of our children respond the best in one of these areas, one of these five areas. Sometimes there's multiple, more than one, but at least in one of these five areas. Now, I want us, especially us with younger children, and those of you who once had young children, I think as we go through this, you'll see why I'm so excited about the things that we learned in this. This book, this lesson doesn't help anybody else. It's already done its purpose, as far as I'm concerned. It has helped me. I thoroughly enjoy getting this study ready, and I think it's going to make me a better father if I apply these things that we're going to talk about. So we're going to go through and talk about these five different languages of love. And what I want you to do as we go through here, especially those of us who have young children, grandparents, if you have grandchildren who are younger, I want you to try to pay attention and see which one fits your child. I tell you what, I nailed my children, and I'll tell you how at the very conclusion of this lesson. I was dead on with it, but I never really paid attention to the fact that I knew them if it hadn't been for this book. First of all, let's go back to Mark chapter 10. Mark chapter 10, as we introduce the first language of love to children. In other words, how can they connect with that feeling that they know I love them unconditionally? The first language of love when it comes to raising young children is this: physical touch. Physical touch. Mark chapter 10, and let's start with verse 13. And pay attention to this. God knows what's best for us, and He's teaching us something here. Then they brought little children to Him that He might touch them. Talking about Jesus. They brought little children to Jesus so that He could do what? Touch them. But the disciples rebuked those who brought them. But when Jesus saw it, He was greatly displeased and said to them, "Let the little children come to Me and do not forbid them, for of such is the kingdom of God. Assuredly I say to you, whoever does not receive the kingdom of God as a little child will by no means enter it." Now watch verse 16. And He, Jesus, took them up in His arms, laid His hands on them, and blessed them. I want to ask you a question. Could Jesus have just blessed them without touching them? Absolutely. Whatever blessing, He could have blessed them without touching them. But what did He do? Watch what He did. He took them up in His arms and then He blessed them. Why? Because God knows children need the blessings of the physical touching of those who love them unconditionally. It's something here that His disciples thought that Jesus was just too busy with, quote, more important matters. But to Jesus, Think about what he was doing here on this earth. He was coming to seek and save those that were lost. He was healing people. He was bringing people back from the dead. He was rebuking Pharisees. And so obviously, perhaps we would have done the same thing. His disciples say, wait a second. Jesus doesn't have time to mess with these little brats. He came here to do these wonderful, great things. He is here to save people, redeem people, to bring people back from the dead. Kids, get away from here. But Jesus took time in the midst of all of that. He took these little kids in his arms and he touched them and blessed them. Why? Because the one who made children knows what they need. They need to be touched by somebody who loves them unconditionally. And Jesus sure fits that bill, doesn't he? Studies show that many parents touch their children only when it is absolutely necessary. All of us will say, well, yeah, I touch my children. I get them dressed. I get my little kid dressed, my little girl dressed, my little boy dressed. I pick them up and I do this and I do the things that are necessary. I touch him probably several times throughout the day. I hold his hand when I don't want him to get hit by a car, just different things like that. But that's not the type of love or touching we're talking about. We're talking about touching your children, hugging your children, holding your children when there's no obvious reason to do so. That's the type of touch we're talking about, quality time of holding your children. Children crave this. Children crave this. I'm not a child expert by any means, but I tell you, this is one of the most obvious things, one of the most obvious truths, I think, in all the world. I substitute sometimes at the local elementary school. My wife teaches third grade there. My children go there. And I substitute quite a bit. And one thing about children, they love adults. And believe this or not, last week I subbed in kindergarten for 2 days. And I'm going to sub in another kindergarten class this week. And it's absolutely, believe it or not, one of my favorite classes to sub in. But anyway, last year's kindergarten, I subbed in there a lot. Well, of course, now last year's kindergarten are first graders. I wish you could see this, and I'm not tooting my own horn. It's not because I'm special by any means. They do this with other teachers as well. But you know those little first graders, they're commanded by their teachers. You stay in a perfect line. As a matter of fact, we've got little lines on the floor, and those kids are supposed to walk right on that line. And so they'll see me walking by in the hall, and they'll keep one foot in that line, and they'll just reach out. Don't they, Mindy? They'll do that, and they'll reach out like this. They just want a hug. They'll keep one foot. I'm glad you ought to see this. And they'll reach out as far as they can, just wanting to be hugged. Now, why are they doing that? Why is not, hey, Mr. Reynolds, why is that not good enough? Because they want to be touched by somebody that they feel cares for them. They do the same thing with Mindy. I mean, all the time, her kids just want to come up and hug her all the time. Matter of fact, you have to tell them to not go back and sit down. I can't hug right now. Go and sit down. Physical touch, parents, is one of the easiest things, one of the easiest ways that we can show our love to our children. You don't have to be a wise old owl. You don't have to know the best thing to say at the perfect moment. You just pick them up and you hug them. Now, look at your children. Do you think your children especially, is this the area perhaps where they feel your love the strongest? Maybe it's in the physical touch. Think about your children and see if that applies with them. Are they always wanting you to hold them? Are they always wanting you to touch them, to hug them? If you don't kiss them goodnight, are they offended by that? If you don't hug them goodnight, are they offended by that? If you don't hug them before they go to school, does that offend them? If so, they're probably telling you something. They need your physical touch. I want to take just a couple of minutes here, and I don't want to get bogged down on this first point too much, but perhaps some of the reasons why we don't touch our children as often as we should. Perhaps part of it is time. It takes time to cuddle with your children, doesn't it? Especially when you have a million things to do in the house. I know this is probably more talking to women, because I read something one time where a man says, well, I'm going to bed. What's he do? He gets up from the recliner, he walks to his bed, and he goes to bed. Old woman says the same thing from the same room. I'm going to bed, and along the way, she'll do a couple dishes that are still left from supper, stop by, take the clothes from the washer, put them in the dryer, start another load, and that's what her idea is of going to bed. It takes time to spend quality time hugging, touching your children. And so perhaps that's one reason. If your child needs this to make that love connection with you, take the time. Perhaps another reason, I wanted to hit this a little bit, because I think many have drawn back from giving healthy forms of touching to their children because of fears of perceived sexual abuse. Oh, well, that guy hugs his children a lot. That guy hugs his daughters a lot. And I think some of us, especially men I'm talking to now, we feel, man, if I hug my children too much, what are people going to think? Who cares? Let's use common sense. Do I know what's proper and improper touching? Absolutely. As a father, do I know this? Yeah. Do it. Use it. And who cares what anybody else thinks when it comes to you and your children? We all know the difference between good and bad touching. We should never feel weird about hugging our children, cuddling with our children. They need this from us. Especially fathers, do our daughters need this from us. But so do our sons. Now, how about touching through the years? This is what I'm talking about. And this is why I believe this lesson applies to marriage, all walks of life. Do you ever get tired of being touched by those that you love? When? When do you? Because I haven't hit that stage yet. I still love my wife, rubs my back, or just touches me while we're sitting next to each other without even, you know, even thinking about it. She just does it. I still love that. So if I outgrow that, I'm still waiting to. So how do we do this? When our toddlers, it's easy. Our toddlers are always wanting to be picked up. We can spend a lot of time touching them. With them, it's relatively easy. But you know what? When our children get a little bit older, we don't feel perhaps the compulsion to touch them as they need to be touched. But just because they go to school, the need to be touched does not lessen. Now, here's the challenge. What about our teenagers? We got to be careful here. And not because of perceived sexual abuse or anything like that, but we have to be careful here because now the touching gets a little bit more complicated. You ever try, when your children get in the teenage years, to drop them off at school and reach over there and kiss them? What do your teenagers do? Not here! Why? If we're not careful, we'll think, well, they don't want me to touch them anymore. That's not true. I might be mistaken and think my children don't need to be touched anymore. Why? Because they react like that. No, they just don't want to be touched or don't need to be touched in front of their friends. And so just because at times they'll pull away does not mean that they've outgrown this need to be touched. You never do. Have you? I haven't either. And so also, fathers, just because our daughters mature, just because they blossom, begin to bloom, does not mean they don't need to be touched by their fathers anymore, hugged and held by their fathers. It is so important, especially in the teenage years, fathers, that we hug our daughters and let them know that we love them. And there's not a thing wrong with good, clean touching. Well, it's hard to start touching when you haven't touched a lot or haven't been touched or hugged. Perhaps you didn't come from a cuddling family. It's hard to start cold turkey. I've never heard that phrase, but I thought it fits. It's hard to stop some things cold turkey. It's hard to start cold turkey. So how do I start touching my children in proper ways? Perhaps just put my hand on their shoulder for a while. Perhaps just rub their hair. Perhaps just hold their hand, but build up to that point where I feel comfortable and they feel comfortable, if that is what they need to touch my children. I don't have time, but at the end of each of these children, there's a part where it's, or each of these chapters, there's a part where it says, what do the children say? And they ask children, how do you know your mom and dad love you? I know my daddy loves me because he's always hugging me. A little boy said, I know my daddy loves me because he always throws me up in the air, touching. I know that my daddy loves me because of this. Check your children. See if this is the way that they feel love from you. And if it is, boy, load up on it because they need that. Secondly, and these won't take as long, The second language of love is by words of affirmation. In communicating love, words are a powerful, powerful thing. Praise and gentle words are not soon forgotten, are they? Everybody loves to be praised. Everybody loves to hear good things about them, and they need this especially from their parents. How many of you adults still remember certain conversations you had with your parents when you were growing up? Of course, there's probably a particular conversation that you had that will always stick out with you, the birds and the bees. But how about other conversations? Is there a conversation that you had with your parents growing up that still sticks out in your mind? I can remember things 20, 30 years ago, conversations with my parents. Why? Because words are important. But at the same time, cutting words, those also last forever, don't they? Words that our young children need to hear from you. Number one, they need to hear words of affection or endearment. First of all, Proverbs 15:1, I meant to put this in here. A soft answer does what? Turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. Boy, harsh and cutting words will do that quicker than just about anything else. Our children, parents, need to hear from us, and especially words is the way that they feel loved by you. They need to hear words of affection and endearment. Is there a little pet name you have for your child? I remember one time, I told Karina I was going to be talking about her, my youngest, when she was in kindergarten. Mindy was teaching at the time. I would go and pick up Corinne every day from school at 11:30, and then I would take her home and fix her lunch, and it seemed like we had grilled cheese every day. But she would go in and watch her favorite television show while I was getting her food ready. And my daughter's name is Corinne. And my wife started calling her Rennie. And I started calling her Rennie Rudel. And so I would always call Corinne in to eat lunch. I'd say, "Oh, Rennie Rudel." And then she would answer back, "Whatty doodle." And then she would come in and she'd eat her lunch. One day, for whatever reason, I don't know if I was in a bad mood or just wasn't thinking, I said, "Corinne, time to eat." And she walked in there with a sad face and she said, "Why didn't you call me Rennie Rudel?" Now she noticed that, didn't she? Words of affection or endearment are important to our children. Also, words of praise. Now we have to be careful here because we live in a society and a time where people think you have to praise your children nonstop for anything. Everybody gets a trophy. Society is the society we live in today. It doesn't matter, first place, a thousandth place. Everybody gets a trophy. There's not necessarily anything wrong with that. But we can't tell our children they're doing a good job when they're not doing a good job. But they need words of praise from us, not for ordinary things. Kids are too smart. They're going to catch on. They know phonies, don't they? But when our children do something well, tell them about it. "You know, I'm proud of the way that you always get your Bible lessons done. That makes your dad proud. I'm happy about the way you do this." When it's true, take time to give your children words of praise. Also, words of encouragement. You ever look at the word encourage? This is what it literally means: to instill courage. Encourage means to instill courage. I noticed how you shared your toys with Billy today. Or I know the way that you went up and you introduced yourself to that new girl today. That took some guts and you did well in that, and I'm proud of you for that. A soft answer. "Hey, I would like you to do this for me. I would like you to be more like this in this particular situation. How would you like your boss to come and try to instill courage in you to do something on the job? Hey, Reynolds, I need this done by 5:00 tonight. Get it done." Would you respond well to that? Or, "Hey, Mark, listen, we have an opportunity here to really nail this account or whatever business you're in, and I wanted you to be the person to do it. Hey, because I know you can do it. I have confidence in you. Would you do this today by 5? That's a difference, isn't there? But how many times do we do that with our children? "Hey, get it done because I said. Don't ask any questions." He's like a boss like that. Our kids don't want parents like that. And also then, words of guidance. And I've got to hurry up. That trap door's getting closer and closer all the time. All children, listen to this, all children are guided by someone. Do you believe that? All children are guided by someone. We need to give our children positive guidance, not always negative. Don't drink. If you do drink, don't drive. Don't get pregnant. Don't smoke. And oftentimes our guidance can come just in the negative form. And there's times for that. I'm not negating that at all. There are times for that. But I want you to think about something here quickly before we move on to the third. You think about the Garden of Eden. As God was guiding his first children, Adam and Eve, how many of his commands were negative? One, thou shalt not eat of it. Everything else was positive. Have you ever noticed the balance in the Bible about the Ten Commandments even? Five positive, five negative. Look at the Sermon on the Mount. How much of that's overwhelmingly positive as Jesus gives guidance to his children, to his people. Overwhelmingly positive. Let's guide our children. This is what we want to do as Christians. Children, this is the way I want you to be. These are the things I want you to aspire to be. I want you to be the best you can be at this. This is what I want you to do. Not so much don't. But this is what I want you to be as a Christian. And there's a difference there in our guidance. So words of affirmation. Third, quality time. Let's turn quickly to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Quality time. Incidentally, I told you I was going to save it to the last, but I better go ahead in case I don't get to it. This was my middle daughter's, and I knew this as soon as I started reading this book. This was her way that she feels love. And I asked them that at the supper table last night. I went around to each of my children. I say, what makes you think your mom and dad love you? What is it that we do that makes you feel loved? And I guessed all three of them, and I was right about that. But it made me pay attention to it. Deuteronomy chapter 6. So I've got some work to do as a dad, and you probably do too, don't you, dads? We all do. But Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 through 7, watch this, this quality time. The Bible tells us about it. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. Watch verse 7. And you shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. Do you notice that? That's all day, every day. When you rise up, when you walk by the way, when you're in your house, when you put them to bed, quality time with our children. What are you going to do with your quality time? Let me make a suggestion to you that quality time is not necessarily so much about as what we do. It's not so much about the event as it is that we are spending time together. What can you do with some of the things that you have when you have quality time? Spend time doing something your children enjoy, and then listen to them as you do it. Parents, you know this, don't you? Your children will talk more during those times than any time when they get home from school and you grill them, won't they? How was school? What did your teacher say? What did you learn? What is this? Good. How was school? Good. Did you learn anything? Yeah or no. But you do something with your children. Just listen to them talk. They open up in wonderful ways. Talk to your children about how it was when you were her or his age. They love that. Those are some great things that you can do for with quality time. If your child responds to your love with quality time, boy, make the effort and make it. Fourth, gifts. This is my oldest daughter. This is exactly, and I nailed her too. She got it right. Gifts. Didn't we do this last night? Gifts. How did God, you might say, well, giving gifts, that means you're buying their love. Think about that before you say, make a statement like that. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. You wouldn't know anything about God's love if he hadn't given you his only begotten son. You know God loves you because he gave you a gift. Now, here again with everything else, we've got to use some common sense. I'm not talking about spoiling here. I'm not talking about buying things and just giving them everything that they want. That just ruins the whole gift-giving, wonderful part of gift-giving. But special occasions, those occasional gifts, just little things that show that you know your child. I know with my daughter Abby, if I got her anything that has to do with turtles and frogs, she would know that I was thinking of her. Now, Cassie, the oldest one, it's not that easy. It's usually coach purses and things like that. It's a little bit more expensive. But she knows that I'm thinking of her. My youngest daughter, if I get her candy, she's happy with that. But those gifts that show that you know them. I asked my mom about this to make sure I had it right. But here she is, as old as she is, and I won't tell you her age. But how old were you when when you and your dad did what I'm going to talk about?
Kindergarten.
Kindergarten. Wow. When she was in kindergarten, her dad took her, they lived in Taylor, Michigan, took her to Detroit, Michigan, and bought her two dresses. And she still remembers that today. As a matter of fact, if she were telling the story, she'd be crying probably by now. You think that meant something to her? That was a rare occasion, but it meant the world to her. She still remembers her. Her dad never went shopping with the girls, but he took just her that day. She's one of seven children, by the way, too. And those two went shopping together. And that means something. And then acts of service is number five. Acts of service, doing things. And again, we have to be careful. Luke 14, 12 through 14 talks about this. But don't use acts of service to manipulate. In other words, when they're not doing something, not behaving the way, all that I do for you, and then you act like this. No, 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 no. Don't use acts of service to manipulate. Do it for them because it's the best thing for them, and let them see you model that every day in your life. No, again, this doesn't take the place of their chores. But you can do things to let them know by acts of service. Just be as kind as you can to their friends when they come to your house. Be extra hospitable to their friends. Treat their friends when they come into your house extra special. And watch your children respond to that. I hope in this lesson that we have, as we've discussed these five languages of love, that you've been able to find your children in there. I want you to think about this, parents with young children. How do your children respond best? How do they connect best with you? Is it by physical touch alone? If they need that physical touch, give it to them as often as you possibly can. Hold your little daughter. I've made my children promise, and I know this is not right. I made them promise, and Corinne can tell you this, will you still sit on my lap when you're 21 years old? Because you know what? I think I need it as much as they do. But if they respond to your love by physical touch, hug your children. Second, if they respond by these words of affirmation, if words mean a lot to them, then make sure they're there. Give a soft, gentle answer when you can. Third, if they respond by quality time, make sure you take it with them. Boy, it's work, isn't it? But it's worth it. Spend that quality time with your children. You know, I think sometimes some children would miss their television sets more than their daddies, wouldn't they? That ought never to be in our homes. If they respond by those special gifts, think of them and get those little special things for them every once in a while. And perhaps it's by acts of service. I want to think about the perfect family. And I suggest to you that they communicated these five languages of love every single day together. Think about Noah and his wife and their three sons and three daughters-in-law. You think they talked words of affirmation as they were building that ark? You think they spent quality time together? You think there was an intimate touching that was going on? Absolutely. You think there was acts of service? Absolutely. They, no doubt, communicated the language of love every day when they worked together. And I want you to think about how wonderful it was that they had communicated that well when they alone were in that ark with their only family, eight souls together in that ark. Parents, we need to communicate our love to our children. They need to know beyond the shadow of a doubt that I love my children unconditionally, and I always will. When they feel that, our home will change, but not until then. Thank you so much for your time.